We have Paul Simonelli joining us, S-C-I-M-O-N-E-L-L-I, a wonderful author, and he did a book about Roy Sievers, the sweetest right-handed swing in 1950s baseball. He was a big star for the Washington Senators, but he was a big star during the 50s, one of the sluggers during the 50s, and sort of got a little bit forgotten over the years. So Paul went back and went through many archives and many personal interviews with Roy Sievers and others and put together what I think is an outstanding biography of one of the real sluggers. And he was a heck of a Washington Senator as well. So, Paul, nice to have you with us.
Hey, Roddy, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's a book that's put out by McFarland Publishing. So we'd love to promote that. They do a great job. And you can get the book at the Book Tree in Montclair, in Montclair in Oakland. And David up there will get it for you. And David has just about all the great baseball books up there. And this, Paul, I enjoy it. I must tell you, Roy Sievers is one of those stories that got lost. But the Giants are in Washington, taking on the Nationals. He was a Washington Senator. So give us a little of the background of why Roy Sievers perked your interest.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, he was my hero growing up. And I wrote the book as a real homage to all those heroes that the kids had when they were growing up. I mean, everybody loved Mickey in New York. Everybody loved K-Line in Detroit. And in Washington, D.C., we had nothing. And come 1954, when Sievers showed up, we finally had someone who could actually hit home runs. I mean, there was Mickey Vernon, you know, was our big guy and was, you know, the 1953 and 1949 batting champion, I believe two-time batting champion. But he was a good hitter, no question about it, but he didn't poke the ball out into the stands. Roy comes in, and long story, but basically with one arm, is hitting home runs over a 407-foot fence in, you know, dead left field in Griffith Stadium. Wasn't until 1956 did Griffith bring the fences into 380. Oh, yeah, a generous 388 for Roy, and then later 350. But Roy hit home runs at a prodigious rate for Washington, D.C. He set the franchise home run records in 54. From 54 through 57, he shattered all the records, and he set the modern franchise record, which was then broken in 1968 by Frank Howard.
Wow. Roy Sievers. Yeah, let me just say, so people can Google it. It's Roy Sievers, S-I-E-V-E-R-S. Paul Simonelli is our guest, and he's the author of this wonderful biography of his hero, but a heck of a baseball player, and that's Roy Sievers. He was Rookie of the Year in 1949 with the St. Louis Browns. Then he had a number of injuries before being traded to Washington for Gil Cohn, C-O-A-N, who, believe it or not, is the oldest living former New York Giant. How about that?
Really?
That's correct. And I interviewed Gil Cohn, believe it or not.
God bless him.
Really. But Sievers, yeah, had quite a beginning. Now, Rookie of the Year, then he got hurt, and then, of course, was traded over to Washington.
He was the first American League Rookie of the Year in 1949. It was the first year the baseball writers made the Rookie of the Year. They had Jackie Robinson in 47, Alvin Dark in 48, and then Roy got it in 1949. In 1950, he slumped badly, but they still loved him in St. Louis. And then in 51 was the bad year. He started slumping again in St. Louis. They sent him down to San Antonio. He laid out for a fly ball and separated his shoulder significantly. I mean, the ball comes out of the shoulder socket, the whole thing. So he was out for the whole rest of 51. Then in 52, he goes back to spring training, throws his arm out again at the beginning of 52, and he's out for practically the entire year of 52. He comes back in 53 and is used sparingly and, you know, still winds up hitting, you know, 18 home runs or something like that, but he wasn't anywhere near as productive as he was his first year in 1949. So this is significant in the fact that a year-long slump, 2.5 years completely out of baseball, then another third year of rehab. Can you imagine what he would have done had he had two good arms and those 3.5 practically 4 years back again for home run production. He wound up with 318 home runs, but we're looking at least another 100, maybe 120 home runs, and at least another 100 or 150 RBI, if not, I mean, hits, a lot more hits. He would have been, you know, much more productive. He unfortunately was plagued by injury a lot throughout his career. 59, he got injured with the Senators, and that was the impetus for him being traded with to the White Sox in 1960. Then he's traded to the Philadelphia Phillies from 62 to 64, where he gets injured again really bad, and then he's let go right at the, in the middle of 1964, where the Phillies folded at the end of the year. I'm sure everyone in Philadelphia remembers the fabulous fold in 64, and he wound up with the Senators for his last year. So, you know, injuries are always plague a lot of players, but I think it really took its toll on Roy as far as his hitting career is, it was concerned.
But he crossed a lot of paths, which makes the book fun. He roomed with Satchel Paige. What about that, getting that those anecdotes from him?
Oh, they were absolutely the most fun. He loved Satch, and, you know, it was during a segregated era in the 50s, and they asked for someone to room with them. And Roy said, yeah, I'll room with him. I don't care, you know, whatever. And they got to be, you know, really good friends. And he loved the story about he's in a sleeping car while they're traveling between long games, and he's, you know, he's hearing the tap 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 tap, and he's like, what the hell's going on? And so he goes to Satch's room, and he's got this little tiny typewriter, and he's hunting and pecking with one finger answering his fan mail, and he's just blazing away at there. And the other thing that he shared with me was which was amazing, was that whenever they went through these small towns, the African American people like knew that it was the train, and they had signs saying, you know, yay Satch, you know, all that kind of stuff, and they're waving for him at the and Roy never figured out how he did that at all.
Wow, amazing.
Satch never expended any more energy than he had to. He never ran like pitchers were supposed to run for their energy. He never did that. He, the day of the game, he wouldn't warm up anywhere except when it was time to go in, and he'd take some warm-ups, and then he would blaze the ball.
Well, great story about Satchel Paige. It's all in the book, Roy Sievers. It's a nice biography and also a good time capsule of the time of the 50s, late 40s and 50s. Of what baseball was like. Now, then the Washington Nationals, who play here now, and the Giants are going to play them today, have they embraced the history of Roy Sievers? Because he is one of the top players of the old Washington Senators. And, of course, the expansion team, they did come back with them just briefly. But have they embraced the Roy Sievers?
No. No, they haven't. And that's and that is now my raison d'etre, if you will, my reason for really going out and promoting this book, is that God love him. I know Frank Howard. He's a very good friend, and I did work with him and his dear wife, Donna, who's passed away, for the Leukemia Society. And they just enshrined him in the Nationals Ring of Honor. But, you know, my contention is if it weren't for Roy, there wouldn't have been a Nationals franchise, number one, and number two, there wouldn't have been a expansion Washington Senators, and Roy and Frank Howard wouldn't have broken his own record, when he was there. Sievers, between 1954 and 1959, when he was there, he increased attendance at Griffith Stadium by over 40%, and that I got verified. And he put butts in the seats, and he gave a lot of hot dog money to Calvin Griffith. But he was still an expendable player. He was just an expendable player.
Calvin Griffith was not an easy guy to negotiate a contract with.
Oh, he was probably, next to Connie Mack, one of the most parsimonious owners in entire baseball. I mean, the classic story is in 1957, he hits 42 home runs and 331 RBI, runs 118 RBI, runs batted in. And he's the RBI and home run leader, beats out Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle. In 1958, he hits only 39 home runs and has 100 and some RBI, and Griffith wants to lower his salary because he didn't lead the league in any category.
Yeah, it's the old Branch Rickey story. We came in eighth with you. We can come in eighth without you. That was the whole thing. Well, I appreciate having you on. As I said, the book has got great anecdotes about Richard Nixon, and the receivers was one of his favorite players. But it's a real look at Washington baseball and a real hero of Washington baseball. And I'm glad you're pushing this franchise to include him, because he was the slugger of the 50s before Harmon Killebrew really established himself, which he really did more than anything else in Minnesota. So I appreciate having you on.
Thank you.
Paul Simonelli, Simonelli. McFarland Publishers puts it out, and it's called Roy Sievers. But, Paul, it's a very enjoyable read. I want to let the fans know that. The anecdotes are well done, and you really give a real flavor of baseball in that era of what the people were like, the travel was like, and how the players had to fight the owners just for a nickel. So you did a good job. So I appreciate having you on, and we'll put this on our podcast page and also loveofthegameproductions.com so people can go and listen to it again. But good luck with it, and I appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Marty. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Very good. Boy, good book. It really is a lot of fun. And Roy Sievers was one of the sluggers, but he had to fight for everything in the 50s. Being injured, they didn't have the medical care at those points, and you had to fight for every dollar as a player, and that's how Marvin Miller then got involved with the union in the 60s, and it was because of players like Sievers who paved the way and negotiated very diligently with the owners, and the owners never gave an inch, never gave a nickel to players like Sievers, and they held all the cards, and that's when the labor union of the players became very active in the 60s. So it's a good book. He did a good job with it. It's good anecdotes. The Satchel Paige stuff is really good. And they talk about barnstorming in those days. And when the season ended to make more money, Willie Mays would get a group together. Jackie Robinson would. Milt Bowling, Frank Bowling, people like that. And they would play in all sorts of towns across the country, go to Mexico and different places. And they'd make as much money barnstorming for the month of October and November, in sort of warm weather areas, at least, that they would during the season. And it was a huge part of how they supported themselves in those days. So that's a good one for a Sunday morning. All right.